Hi, I'm Monse, and this is Musings of the Artist, a podcast where I have meaningful conversations with all kinds of artists. Musicians, poets, photographers, and other creatives share their honest stories, touching on the duality of being creative, the pure joy of making art, but also the particular struggles that come with it.
I don't want to die and feel like I watched Netflix instead of try.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes to art or being creative, like, I don't need it to pay my bills. You know, I don't think that's the value of the art, although it would be nice to be very comfortable.
And honey, there's no way that I'll ever know, oh, everything about you, but oh, how I love what I do. What I don't know too.
Sam Lamont is the creator of the Hello Humans website and How to Human podcast, which is how I found him. And if you like this podcast, you should definitely check his out as well. He's had many wonderful guests, including Brené Brown, Byron Katie, and his mom, Anne Lamont, which is one of my very favorite episodes. In this conversation, we get deep real fast and cover many important topics. I love that Sam speaks so openly and honestly about his story. He talks about being the sensitive kid who didn't feel like he belonged, about being an addict and getting sober at 22, on being a young dad, learning how to live well with depression, on getting past envy, and how to keep going even when you feel like a failure. He also tells us how pain has been his biggest teacher, and we talk about how the smallest moments of kindness can have a major impact on ourselves and others. If you've struggled with any kind of addiction, I think this will be especially powerful for you to hear Sam's story. But no matter who you are or what you're going through, I think you're going to find plenty of wisdom, comfort, and inspiration throughout the episode. Thank you so much for listening in. I hope you enjoy. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Cool. All right. So thank you so much for doing this, especially after a long day of doing interviews yourself.
It has been a long day, but I have saved enough of myself. This, I don't know what I'm okay, let's go.
Okay, here we go. So I like to start each interview asking a big question, which is actually, since I've been listening to your podcast, realizing it's very similar to your question, which is, who are you? But beyond what you do, you're an artist, you're a podcaster. But what do you do beyond that? And who are you beyond that?
Yeah, well, on the surface level, I am a screw up in a lot of ways. I'm a teen dad, college dropout, ex-meth head. But who am I really? I'm a really sensitive kid who didn't feel like he belonged and felt like he was different than everyone else and was worried about things that I don't think the other kids were worried about. And the world really impacted me. I feel like I was an empath, but I didn't know what that was. I just knew that I didn't even really know how sensitive I was. Like, I wouldn't have used the word sensitive. And I think that maybe is different for a young man who wants to grow up into a big man to use. And I didn't have a dad either. So there was just, I didn't know what it meant to be a man, and I just knew that it probably wasn't being sensitive, but I was. I was a sensitive guy, and it meant that when I was 12 and I had alcohol for the first time and all those worries and insecurities and anxieties went away for a minute, it was on. And I'm an addict and alcoholic, but who am I today? I'm a dad. I grew up without a dad, and I got to show up for my son when his mom got pregnant when I was 19. And it wasn't the plan and it wasn't ideal, but I've stuck with it, and he's 10 now, and it's really great. But what else? I'm just going to spew here.
This is great.
And what's your producer's name?
Aaron.
And Aaron can make it into something beautiful.
Yeah, it already is beautiful. But
thank you.
He
will. Thank you, Aaron, in advance for editing this mess. I'm a podcaster, but I'm somebody, I guess, who just decided to start somewhere, because I'm not, like, I draw, and I'm not the best illustrator, and I sculpted, and it didn't really go anywhere. I got some small gallery shows, but, and I've quit a lot of things, but at least in this one case, this podcast, which, I don't know if you're allowed to say this or not, but it seems like quite a lot of people like, and I like that quite a lot of people like it, happened because I was willing to start it and keep going. So, but also, what else do I identify with? I write, and I like story, and I think I like story regardless of what the medium is, but I prefer to use a medium that I'm good at because I like people to see what I do, because I'm self-absorbed.
I think, well, you've said that to me before, that you're self-absorbed, but I also think you're super giving. And, you know, it's clear from your projects, in particular your podcast, that you, it's important to you to also make sure other people feel less alone and okay. And that's why I think part of, at least from what I understand, is why you share your stories. It's not just because you want to tell them, it's because you want people to feel okay in their skin too.
Yeah, it's not exhibition for exhibition's sake. That's what Reddit is for. But I think that we have a lot more in common than we know. And unfortunately, what's in common is all the stuff that we don't want to talk about.
Yeah.
And so I was just talking about this on the last conversation I was having just like an hour ago. But if you go online, you see everybody is in a fantastic relationship, or absolutely loving being single, or loving traveling, or whatever it is. It's, we naturally want to pick up the phone when things are going well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just natural. We're like so new to interacting the way that we're interacting these days that our real humanness is getting erased.
Yeah.
out of fear that our humanness is something that other people don't have, and that we're broken objects. And what's true is that, like, you know, you can go on a road trip with somebody you love dearly, and you're probably going to hate them at some point because they're annoying and they talk too much, or they, you know, go to the bathroom at different times than you, or whatever it is. And what's true is that if you get to the end of the trip and you make it to the place that you meant to be and you're still talking, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And you just don't see that. And so that's why I talk about it, and then what happens when you start talking about it is other people tell you their stuff.
Yeah, totally.
And you get to see what's true. And what's true is that a lot of us have this in common. I'm not convinced that there's some people that are like, everybody's fucked up. I'm not convinced. I think there's some quote-unquote normal people, but I think that it's really abnormal. So they're like, they're the fucking weirdos.
Totally.
I had an intern this summer who was like, I put this funny post out of to get an intern, and I was like, this is the one place where, like, your depression and anxiety and trauma are all a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
And this young man shows up, Logan, and he's just got none of it.
How old is he?
He was 20.
Give him time.
No, he's like unbroken. Like, he grew up with like a family that's still together, and he's just like, and he's just like game for whatever. I'm like, why are you here? He's like, I just want to help. Like, I just want to, I love what you're doing. I love that you're helping in your own way, and I want to help. And he's what you would say is normal. And he's like the first person I've ever met like that, quite possibly. I was just blown away that somebody like this exists. But I think most of us have the stuff. We have the insecurity that we're not enough. And we have parents that were complicated and that we think could have done things differently. and we're a lot alike.
Circling back from sort of two things you started with when you were describing yourself that I wanted to talk about. One is the sensitivity and being a sensitive boy and, you know, knowing that, that there was something that you felt was sort of different about your, you didn't, you couldn't name it at the time, but you felt that. Do you remember, because I'm just always curious about this, being a super sensitive person myself, and I recall being a little girl and feeling that, you know, do you remember when you first really felt that and felt that there was something like, oof, just really like heavy or deep inside of you?
Not that I would identify as being sensitive. I have a very sensitive son.
Yeah.
And I don't think he knows he's sensitive. We all say it, right? Like, me and his mom will tell his teacher he's a sensitive kid. And I'll say things to him like, it's okay. You know, you're just a sensitive guy. He's basically vegan. Mm. We've compromised that he'll eat, like, shrimp and stuff, you know, but because he's sad about animals. That was a whole other conversation I wasn't thrilled about, but I'm sure some people will be on listening in. But I didn't have that self-awareness for it. I didn't even, like, sometimes I'll talk to people on the show and they will have known that they were depressed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that I had depression.
Yeah.
I thought the world just was this thing that I thought it was. And I thought it was this, like, very high stakes, intense place where any decision could really fuck you up. Can I swear?
Oh yeah, totally.
Where any decision could really fuck you up and, like, ruin your life, and none of the kids would like you anymore. Mm. So I didn't get that until way later. I was high when I was like 12 to 22. And so that didn't help. But I didn't start to even recognize how sensitive I was or how depressed I was or how hard I had been on myself until I was sober. Hmm. So until I was 22.
And so that was 22 when you became sober?
Yeah.
And what made you want to do that and change?
What made me want to sober up?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a little worried about getting explicit with some of it, but I'll tell you the story as best I can. There's one thing where I start to worry about, like, legal issues, but I was high at the end of the road. I was high on meth every hour I was awake, which was a lot because meth keeps you up. And I was 22. I guess I was 21 for a majority of my meth use. And I was miserable. I was absolutely fucking miserable. I would wake up miserable. And so it's one odd thing to, like, feel like that's your life now at 21. And I had a custody battle coming up, because Jax's mom and I had split up, and I had all kinds of problems. I had gotten in a fight with a friend of mine and it had gone way too far, and he had taken on significant damage. Mm-hmm. Like, life changing. And his family hired a private eye. And so there's a private eye following me around, trying to help bring charges against me and prove that I was the guy who did this to their son. And my mom had pretty much disowned me. She basically said, good luck, dude, you know. And none of that was enough. Mm-hmm. Like, none of that was too much. It was just like, ah, fuck it. Like, you know, when my mom said, good luck, man, I'm out of your life, I was basically like, well, fuck her, that unloyal bitch. You know? And when all my friends left, I was just like, yeah, these guys are fucking total weasels. And I had a reason for why the fight had gone that far. And I used to use different language, but I'm trying to tone it down just because, again, language. But why the fight had gone that far, and why I had a son, and I was 21 years old. I had friggin' 1.5 year old, and with a woman that I didn't get along with, and that was going to be a very nasty custody battle. And what actually ended up, so all of those reasons I think would be enough for anyone to get sober who was like sane. But I wasn't at the time. So what ended up happening is there's a neighbor girl across the hall, and she would come over and we would drink and watch Dexter. You know, the TV show. And I would go into the bathroom and get high, and we would just do this thing. And one day she said, "You know, I think I'm an alcoholic." And I said, "No way, because my mom's an alcoholic. And she's in a recovery program, and it works, and you should go. It'll help you." And she said, "I don't want to go alone. Will you go with me?" And I went with her. And when I got there, I saw a way out. I saw that if I got sober and I got a sponsor and I did all the, you know, things that they asked me to do, that my sponsor would come to court for me, that I could piss clean. And I would just make all my problems go away because I would no longer be a raging psycho meth head. And so that's what I did.
Wow.
And I got sober. And the idea was just to get sober to like clean everything up. And then I could go back to partying. And about 8 months in, the neighbor girl who had been going with me every single night basically... I got accepted to a school in New York, and she left. And a week later, I called her and I said, how's your program going? How's sobriety? And she said, "I'm not an alcoholic, you asshole. You know,
wow.
You haven't been taking me to the meetings. I've been taking you to the meetings."
Wow.
And, by a year I had a life.
Wow.
You know, I had, I was employable. I could work a regular job. I didn't have to hustle. And I had a girlfriend, and I didn't quite have the skills to be a good boyfriend yet, but I was on my way. I was sober and learning. And I had a life that I wanted, that I didn't have before, so I decided to keep going, and that's how it's happened. I've had so many ups and downs in that period. I don't want to paint the picture that I got sober and my life just became like unicorns and rainbows. But it's given me a life that I definitely didn't have before.
Wow. I'm so like touched by your neighbor, and just what a that's so moving that she just like loved you that much and was like, you know, found a way to get you there.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's beautiful, and wow. Thanks for sharing that story.
Yeah, I don't get to share it often.
Well, I'm glad you did. I also want to talk about choosing a life of art, of being an artist. I was listening to a couple of your episodes, and I had gone back to the very beginning with the episode with your mom, Anne Lamott. So it was one of the most, truthfully, one of the most touching conversations I've ever listened into. I loved everything you guys both said, but one part that really stuck out to me was when you were talking about choosing the life of being an artist, even when it's not convenient at all. And you were asking her about why she chose to be a writer and do this when you had no money and she was raising, you know, you alone and all these things. And I wanted to sort of turn the question on you and talk a little bit about that with you, and what, because I can relate to it wholeheartedly. It's sort of the way I've always lived my life. I make choices based off of sort of my gut and my heart and what pulls me to do the things that I do, not so much about anything rational. I get told all the time that I'm crazy for making the decisions that I make. So I want to get your take on that. And like, why have you chosen to have this path?
When I was a little scared kid, one of the big things that scared me was death. And I don't know, I feel like I've talked to a bunch of people about this, and I feel like some people have this experience and some people don't. But when you start thinking about death to the point where you can imagine no longer being conscious, and you get this like pit in your stomach, like this horrible, this is all going to end pit. And I think that's why originally I found religion. It's very convenient in that it promises you an afterlife. But I think part of the reasons why I try to make the things that want to come out of me is because I want to die as gracefully as possible. And I want to get to the end and have... I don't want to die and feel like I watched Netflix instead of try.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes to art or being creative, like, I don't need it to pay my bills. You know, I don't think that's the value of the art, although it would be nice to be very comfortable financially. Just throwing that out there.
universe.
Yeah. But, you know, my podcast, which is like the main creative outlet, and I wish I was doing something like a little more independent and sexy, like writing. I am working on a book, but it's, you know, I don't have anything to point to that's like, I'm a working artist, but I do this podcast and it feels very creative to me. And I do it with the heart of an artist.
Mm.
The podcast just got 1 million downloads. And I had to process that for a second. And I had to say, because it felt like, wow, something has happened here. 1 million downloads. Because we're so used to hearing that as like some major success. And that didn't pay any of my bills. You know, it didn't. It just was kind of a letdown. Because I thought it was going to be something that it wasn't. But what's true about the podcast is 4 people have written me and said that they had planned to kill themselves. And a few of them sent me their suicide letters that they had written out. And they said, I heard something on this episode or that episode that made me want to go get help instead, or made me want to wait another day. And that feels like a giant success.
That's so much more important than 1 million downloads.
There's 570 people that are my patrons, and they want to see me keep going. And they pitch in what they can. And some people pitch in $1, and some people pitch in 50.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like a success. But at the end of the day, how much money you make at your art, this is something that I learned talking with Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way.
Oh, yeah.
I have that.
Yeah, did you talk to her on your podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe I haven't heard that yet.
Everyone needs a copy of that.
Yes, agreed.
Because you can flip to any page and you'll get something.
Totally.
And she's one who really, like, the value of the art is to make it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how many episodes I have as of now. 42. Not that many. I'm pretty slow. This thing's going
at quality, not quantity.
Yeah, this thing's going at the speed of Sam. There are 42 episodes that if they need a home, if that episode needs to find a home somewhere, they're out there. They can find a home. And that was the same when I was writing on the blog, which is what Hello Humans used to be. It was a blog. And people would send in stories, and I would say, you know, you maybe have sent in a story because you saw that one of our other stories kind of went viral and got a lot of shares, which is what everyone wants, that dopamine hit. I can't promise you that because we're just not that website. We don't just inherently, every piece just doesn't inherently get a shit ton of views. Some pieces just took off. But what I can promise you is that if your piece needs a home, it's ready. And that's why I like to create it. Also, selfishly, I feel like if you have the heart of an artist and you have things from the whatever realm you want to call it, I really feel like it comes from another realm. Not to get all woo-woo on you.
I love getting woo-woo.
Okay. I believe in like the muse or the creative force. And I do kind of believe that if I get an inspiration to do something, like 4 other people have also gotten the same inspiration, And that's the Muse trying to get this thing made.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, you know, Sam's a great guy, but he hasn't done everything I've sent him. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to send it to 4 other people, and it's going to get made. And so I try to honor it, and I try to make it. And I feel like if I'm not making, I've had a comfortable job where I wasn't making anything. And it was pretty close to making something. I was like facilitating making,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't making. I get sick.
Yeah.
I get resentful. I get bitter. I get jealous of friends that are doing it.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I'm still human, but for the most part, if a friend comes up to me today and he says, "Hey man, I'm starting my own podcast," or "I'm starting to write a book," or "I just sold a book to a publisher, which is something that I want to do in 2020. I'm not threatened by them.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing my own work.
And you're being true. You're honoring your own stuff. You know, it's interesting. Like somebody, I think a lot about recently of envy and jealousy, because you hear about that a lot lately.
Especially I feel it in this, sometimes.
Yeah. Everybody does. And I think especially with social media, it just, enhances that. And I had a friend who, when I started my podcast, said, instead of saying, "I'm so excited for you," he said, "I'm jealous." And I said to him, "You should start a podcast then, because if he's jealous of me, that means that it's telling him it's something that is calling to him, that he wants to do it. And he has a podcast now." So, you know, and I think that's just an important information, is when we do have that ping of envy. It's just like, what is it there in that person that they're doing that maybe I want to do and needs to come out of me? And there's room for all of us, you know? I think as long as we're being authentic and being true to who we are, like, there's room for everybody.
Since going full-time, which I think is a threatening moment for your friends who also long to be creatives,
right?
I've lost a lot of friends.
Hmm.
And it's because it's threatening and it's tough. And it's tough to be scrambling to pay the bills and to connect with a 9-to-5-er.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because... God, I was so comfortable when I was still working a job. But what's true is that the right people will show up.
Totally.
They're not the people that you think they will be often, which is strange. It's strange for like this peripheral person who we weren't that close to all of a sudden. It's like, you know, when you're like, when you're heartbroken, like devastatedly heartbroken.
Yes, I do.
Like the healer is always like your like 7th best friend.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
And it's like, oh. And it's like, who the fuck are you, man? Like, hey, where's my best friend? Okay. Like, why are they not the ones to help me?
Yeah.
But there's just this person who just like kind of steps up, or that's who they are. They're their healer or something.
For sure.
And they're the ones who show up when shit goes down. Yeah. And that's what happens, is like, you just kind of, you step into it and things fall into place and you're terrified. And you feel like a failure all the time, and everybody else looks like they're doing much better than you. But you just keep doing it. And my mom said in that conversation, which I had never heard before, apparently her dad used to say this to her. She never said it to me. I'm very jealous of her experience. But that's a debt of honor.
Mm.
That, you know, to try and create the things. Did you listen to episode 1?
Who was it?
With this guy, Jonathan Gustin. Who helped me start this whole thing?
No, I don't think I did. I think I listened to episode 3 is what I'm thinking of, Jonathan.
That's a good one.
Yes. Okay, sorry.
This is a guy, he's a therapist who decided he didn't want to... His name's Jonathan Gustin.
Yeah.
He started a thing called Purpose Guides Institute. He's a therapist that no longer wanted to hear about people's mommy issues. So he just decided, my new practice is I'm going to help you figure out what you're here on the planet to do.
Mm.
And he's part of the reason why I started Hello Humans. And I didn't know it was going to be a blog or a podcast, but I knew I wanted to be... He helped me figure out kind of what my purpose was. And at the time, what it had fleshed out to be was, I want to be somebody who creates things that have the chance to change your state, even if it's for a few seconds.
Mm.
And it's like, when you are having a very hard day and somebody walks down the street with that kind of weird... Mormony contagious smile,
mm-hmm.
and you catch it for a second,
yeah,
you might go immediately back to having a bad day after you stop smiling. but that brief reprieve you got was a miracle.
Totally.
And we've reserved that word miracle or magic or I'm blanking because I'm tired for like these giant events. But that reprieve, that breath of fresh air you got to take, even though you went back to being angry, that's a miracle. And those are moments I want to create.
Totally. Same.
And I can't change anyone's life. That's like such a personal journey. Like any guru who thinks they're changing people's lives is a fucking asshole. Because the work that it takes to change your life is so personal. And it's that person doing the work. But I would like to be a breath of fresh air here and there.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't mean to be long-winded.
No, that was so good. And I have so much to muse on that. But I want to keep...
And this helped me. I need this on this conversation for any creatives out there.
Yes.
This is the number one thing that has helped me in the process. Is we're really obsessed with like momentum.
Uh-huh.
And so you got to like... build it up and keep the momentum going. But that the journey is like, it's like a boat going across the ocean,
mm-hmm.
where it has to stop sometimes. But when you start, you're just continuing on. And eventually you make it. And the other thing that he told me that was a game changer for a perfectionist like me,
mm-hmm.
was when you get inspiration, you see it in like high def.
Hmm.
Right, like you can see every facet of it, every little nut and bolt and every tiny little detail, but that's actually coming to you in the language of the muse, and your job isn't to reproduce it.
Hmm.
It's to translate it from like the language of the universe of the muse into the human language.
Wow.
And the human language means that it's not going to be like as great. Like totally. It's just going to be different.
Totally.
And it's going to have mistakes in it, and it's not going to be as perfect, but your job isn't to reproduce this thing. It's to find a translation. Like they don't share the same words.
Yeah. I love that.
I need
to go listen to that after you leave.
That's a killer one. Yeah.
That was your first one, huh?
That's my first one. That's the one I shopped out to other people and been like, this is what I'm trying to do.
Interesting. So was it like, did you know you were going to be doing the podcast when you interviewed him? Or was it just sort of like, I'm just testing this out kind of thing?
I wanted it to be a podcast.
You did. You knew that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to help you shape the whole idea.
I was listening to like 2 or 3 podcasts a day. And I, for whatever reason, felt like I could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. I was, for me, it was funny. It's like, I was such a avid podcast listener and just constantly listening to them. And I was like, one day I'm going to have a podcast. And then finally I was walking down the street one day and I was like, why isn't one day now? Like, I should totally do this now. And I had background in interviewing artists. And I was like, there's no reason I can't do this by myself. I don't have to be doing this for an employer, you know? So, yeah.
And worst comes to worst, it's like some cool shit our kids get to hear.
Totally.
Our grandkids, our great-grandkids get to listen to. Like,
for sure.
Yeah.
And I love, just circling back to what you said, because I believe that wholeheartedly, in the power, for lack of a better word, of a smile or the little moments. And like you said, it may just be a little moment and then pass. But I think a lot about how, I don't know, being a really sensitive person, maybe you can relate to this, is that I get affected so easily by those little things, whether it's a positive or a negative. So like sometimes I'll be walking down the street and feeling really sad and I'm not quite sure why. And sometimes there isn't any real reason for it, but a lot of times it is like some little thing that happened that made me sad and I have a pit in my stomach feeling because some little blip happened that it was not a big deal to a normal person, but it really like seeped into me, you know? And on the flip side, you know, seeing somebody and they give me a bright smile, that can sort of shift that knot in my stomach, you know, it can go the other way too. So I think about it a lot because I think about my own actions and how I interact with people and just knowing that all those little things can have such a big impact on my own mood and my own, I don't know, my being, you know? And so I think if anyone else is like me, like I want to be able to give that positivity to them, you know? So
I can't watch somebody give a dollar to a homeless person and then not want to give a dollar to a homeless person.
Yeah.
Or if the person in line in front of me is ridiculously kind to the barista,
yeah,
I also want to be. And
it's contagious.
It is contagious to, you know, if it's authentic, it's contagious. Yeah. I saw, did you see that viral video? Maybe this is like a Reddit thing. You guys are all, you're an Instagrammer, huh? You're not, are you a Redditor?
No.
Okay. Where this guy, it's in like, at some other country, this guy has a mango stand.
Yeah.
It's like selling mangoes on a stick or something. And the whole stand just comes crumbling down and all the mangoes go across the floor. And you just see the look on his face. It's like his whole day's money is covered in dirt now. Oh. It's all these exposed mangoes on sticks or something. And one person comes up and gives him a bill. And all of a sudden, this giant crowd of people just start waiting in line to give him money. And they're all buying a mango that fell on the ground, basically. Aww. And that's magic.
Yeah. You know,
like, I love that sense that, like, magic is real. And magic is real, and it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
For the most part. Like, if you're listening to this, you could text a friend who is trying to be an artist or a new business owner, and you could tell them that you just believe in them.
Yeah.
If you do, you should.
Don't lie.
You probably should say it, but that's huge. Like, how often do you just get people out of the blue saying, totally. Not often. And you can write a friend a letter, and they can get this novel letter in the mail.
For sure.
That took a little bit, a few extra seconds, but, or you can just do something nice for a stranger, and that's magic.
I always say that, like, you know, whenever I'm feeling really down and depressed, or maybe not even depressed, just sad, the number one thing that'll turn that around is taking my focus outside of myself and doing those little things for other people. Just like you said, like going to the, you know, post office and mailing a friend a book that I know that they'll, or I think that they'll like, or sending them a letter, or texting somebody something nice. Just being able to brighten somebody else's day, as cheesy as that sounds, like, it really does. It takes you out of yourself, and it just makes you feel like so productive that you could, like, kind of uplift somebody else, you know?
That's what they say in recovery too, is like, being of service will save you.
Yeah.
I don't always remember it though in the heat of the moment.
Of course. Yeah.
But when you do, it's really special.
Totally. Yeah. I want to ask you, I ask everybody this on my podcast, because it is sort of focused on mental health. We talk about a lot of things, but mental health is a big part of it. And, you know, when you're going through a hard time, whether it's years of going through it, or even just like going through a breakup, or going just having a bad day, like, what are your sort of go-to things to try to help you get to the other side of it?
Wow. Well, I mean, that's been like my life's journey, is learning how to live well with this thing that is kind of hard to live with sometimes. I have pretty severe depression and pretty intense anxiety, and I call it life-threatening depression, because left unchecked, it ends up in suicidal thoughts. Right now, I am medicated, mm-hmm. and part of my disease has been that I feel like I don't need medication anymore, and I go off and I struggle really intensely until I realize that I don't have to struggle this much, which normally takes way too long or gets way too scary before that happens. But I've learned right now that I would like to take my medication every day, at least for the next year, and then I can try to fuck up my life after that. I travel with my medication, mm-hmm. and I just say that first and foremost, because I'm somebody who basically works in mental health. You know, that's half of the stuff I talk about on my podcast, mm-hmm. and I don't always do it, and I feel like some weird guilt or shame, or that some combination of probiotics and diet and exercise and sleep habits should be able to fix me, mm-hmm. or positive affirmations or whatever. But with the medication out of the way, I will say the most effective things I've found are those other stuff, that eating well, eating a lot of whole foods, like non-processed whole foods, basically just shove a lot of vegetables in your face often, that pushes the needle quite a bit.
Yeah.
Your diet really, you know, there's new stuff about the gut-brain barrier, mm-hmm. and the exercise is huge. I like working out with weights and trying to get bigger and becoming a specimen. But cardio is for my mind. Mm-hmm. Like intense cardio is really what I do for my mental health. And this one, I don't want to be a hypocrite and say that I do such a great job about it, but this is something that I know to be true, is sleep hygiene. Mm-hmm. When I have a bedtime and a wake-up time and my body knows its cycle, it's way easier to be stable when you're actually being stable.
Right. Yeah.
and meditation. And again, I don't do these every day. So that's kind of the challenge, is like, first you have to find the solution and then you have to try to implement it as best you can. But I know what does work, and what does work is good sleep hygiene, diet, exercise, and, you know, meditation or prayer, if that's your thing, and medication.
Yeah, some solid tips.
And therapy.
And, of course, therapy. Yeah.
I fired my therapist, though, so I need a new one.
It's important to find a good one.
I had a good one. He was too good.
He
was too good? That's why I fired him. He got too close to the fire, man.
Yeah. I'm sad because my therapist, who I adore, is she's in San Francisco, and so we can't go on because I live in Portland.
Damn.
So I have to find a new therapist.
I wish you luck. That's like a marriage.
It is. Yeah. It totally is.
Good luck finding a mind spouse.
But it's important. It's really important to find a good one because it can really mess you up if you're with the wrong one and just makes you feel worse. So.
Yeah, you should be. People need to realize you can fire them.
Totally.
They're not serving you.
Yeah.
Or if they're serving you too well.
It has to be. It has to be the right fit. Whose creativity moves you?
That's tough. I don't follow a lot of creatives because it messes with me.
Really?
A little bit, yeah. So when I was sculpting, I wouldn't look at other sculpture. Because somebody would, like, make something with an umbrella and be like, well, can never use an umbrella again. You know?
Well, you were saying that about podcasts, too. You don't really listen to them anymore, right?
No, not ones that are close to my podcast.
Interesting. So I guess you will not be listening to mine.
I'll probably listen to this. No, I can't say. I'll listen to whatever episode you think is the best.
Okay.
I would love to get the full experience.
Yeah, it's interesting. I get that, though. I get it a little bit, but... I don't know. I listen to yours and I get a lot out of it, even though it is sort of similar in a similar vein to mine.
I think that's probably more normal. You're probably exhibiting normal behavior. I don't know. I just notice it helps me feel like ownership over it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
That if somebody's like, oh, well, this person does that too, I can be like, oh, well, I don't listen to that person, so.
Well, who cares? It's always back to
I care.
Really? No, I mean, who cares?
I mean, I'm not saying that's a good thing.
I know. I get what you're saying, though. I think it's like it's, but that gets back into the jealousy thing, I think, like where we have to just know that if we're being authentically ourselves, like that's all we can do, the best we can do, and that we're going to be creating good work, or maybe not good work, but we're going to be creating the right work if we're, you know, being authentic. And it doesn't matter if other people are doing the same thing you're doing. It's like it's still coming from them. It's different because we're not the same person, you know? So, anyways, that's my two cents.
No, I wish I could. I'll box myself out of everything.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, can't use intro music. Like, I'm serious. Like, yeah, it's like a disorder or something. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, yeah. No, I can get that. And it's good to know who you are, too, and, like, what, you know. So, I wanted to ask also, you've interviewed so many interesting people. Has there been, I remember asking Krista Tippett this question, you know, like what's been one of her favorite episodes, and her reply was it's always the last one she did. So not to, I don't know why I just told you that, because I was going to ask you the question, but I just thought that was an interesting answer. But who,
you've like, poisoned the well, that's now obviously my answer.
Maybe not favorite, but has there been one that stands out that's really been life-changing, that has really, you know, moved you in a certain way?
Yeah, Paul Williams, episode 3, that was life-changing.
Oh, yeah, I listened to that one. That was incredible.
We're still in touch. He's a huge patron. And,
You could tell he really believed in you.
He really does.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was a game changer.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, last formal question, then I'm going to ask you some of your favorite things. Okay. Who or what has been your biggest teacher?
Unfortunately, pain. Like, unfortunately, I have a thick head, and the universe knows it, and so I get cracked pretty hard when I need to course correct. What has been my biggest teacher is me behaving in a way that I'm ashamed of, and looking back on it and being like, I never want to be that fucking person again. Mm. Or I never want to treat somebody I quote unquote love that way again. I really learned everything the hard way, and it's frustrating because I know people that didn't do it that way, and I want to do that. Mm-hmm. But just in my experience so far, that's what did it. I learned how to honor my romantic commitments by being a cheater and by burning the fucking village down and causing a lot of pain and being in a lot of pain. I learned how to be a good friend by being such a shitty friend and having people that I loved walk away. Mm. I learned how to keep at it by quitting and being so bummed that I quit. Like, I feel like I got to a, what they would call in recovery, a bottom of so many areas where I just said, I don't ever want to feel this way again. And I'm willing to do whatever it takes. Mm. And, yeah, that's, I wish it wasn't true, but I guess that's the point of mistakes.
Yeah.
Is to learn from them. It just feels like I've made some fucking gargantuan mistakes.
It's just like Maya Angelou said, you know, when you know better, you do better.
Yeah.
So thank you for your honesty. Okay, so now I'm just going to ask you some of your favorite things.
This is rapid fire?
Rapid fire. I say okay. Rapid fire, but you can take your time with it. Okay, how about a favorite book?
The Road Less Traveled.
How about a favorite album or song?
I don't believe in music as an art form.
What?
I'm kidding. there's a song called Skin of My Country Yellow Teeth, I think it's called.
I don't know it.
And I don't know why I love it so much, but I do.
Awesome. Okay. I'm going to check it out. How about a favorite place?
The Wu Wei Tea Temple in Fairfax, California.
Oh, interesting. I have not been there.
You need to go, clearly.
So what is it about that so special?
It's like a little tea house. And I sometimes I'll leave my office, which should be my favorite place because I've spent so much time and energy trying to make it the best place ever. And then I go to the tea temple, and that's like one of my favorite places.
Awesome. A favorite memory?
I have a photo of myself on my desk of when I was probably like 5 or 6. And I'm like, I have Legos, like the big little kid Legos on my head. And I'm looking up at something. I don't know what. And I don't remember that specific moment. But I remember that kid, and that kid is something that I've been going back to lately. It's like some of the work I'm doing. And I'm remembering the kid who believed in himself so completely that literally anything was possible. And he didn't know it, but like so many adults would find that belief annoying or take it as like arrogance and try to like humble him. But he had it really figured out, and his confidence was a lot for people, but that's who I wanted. I'd rather believe in myself and nothing happen than act like nothing is going to happen and not believe in myself.
Yeah. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was really special. of the Artist is audio produced by Aaron Mooring, and the theme song is by Heather Maloney.